Well, I can't afford to wait any longer because I'm falling asleep. Didn't go to bed last night and didn't prepare. Well, I prepared the study just now, but I've been so sleep deprived. I thought I was going to bed, and then I realized, no, I haven't made my video yet. But I didn't go to sleep last night, and I had a very long conversation today with somebody and almost forgot to make the video. But it was a very important thing. I'm trying to get some more firewood, and I was talking about all sorts of things to do with health and all sorts of things with somebody today about the same time as I was talking about the firewood and or about trying to get some more firewood and all the other things I've been doing. But last night I didn't go to bed, partly because I thought I might be getting some firewood today. But somehow it's very important that we not see what I learned today. It's important that we not interrupt people, because I was interrupted. I also forgot to take my I was interrupted how well it something happened today that was unexpected. That's what it was. But it's the idea of being interrupted. It interrupts my routine, because the interruption was I didn't go to bed last night because I was waiting for the, hoping to get the firewood today. But I didn't go to bed, and we had a miscommunication about the firewood somehow. I didn't know they were coming. I didn't know when they were coming, and it didn't work out that they missed me when I was here. And so I was still didn't go to bed. And then I realized I forgot to take my magnesium last night because I was up all night. I usually take it before I go to bed. So I've had a problem because of not taking my magnesium last night. A serious problem that's not nice. It's not very polite to talk about either. But it's the problem of passing solid waste being not easy, and in my case painful and damaging. But anyway, my rectal fissure is not a very nice thing either to talk about. So the Crucible of Credible Creed is chapter 7, paragraph 9 today. Whilst the vast majority of eminent archaeologists clearly disagree with our dating of Abraham, how do we keep faith? And I've already made this whole video, and then I realized the audio was faulty, and I needed to reboot my computer, but I didn't know that. I thought maybe I destroyed some component or I destroyed something. It looks like rebooting fixed it, but it was a very bad audio. So how do we keep our faith if our chronology, our dating of Abraham, agrees with no one else? Well, they disagree with us, these eminent archaeologists, but they also disagree amongst themselves. So that's not so discouraging, because if they disagree amongst themselves, then why should we believe that they are correct? Our faith is refined in our crucible, in the fire, just as theirs is tested with a different crucible. And some have experienced shipwreck in their faith because of that test, the test of the crucible of chronology. And some people, when they found the Bible didn't match up with their chronology, they abandoned their faith in the Bible. It is not the crucible that is being refined. We don't change our chronology, and neither did they. Typically, we don't change that chronology once we have a chronology. It is faith that is held safely within the crucible, which is being purified. Our faith is purified. If the crucible is a worthy vessel, in other words, it needs to be the correct chronology so that it won't destroy our faith. You recall, and in our case, it didn't destroy our faith, because we found amazing confirmation of our dating of Abraham due to the times of the famine and the winds of, I mean, the ice ages, right? And the winds in Western Europe, it turns out, it's well known that the precipitation comes from westerly winds, which are formed and blow over the warm waters of the Gulf Stream current that flows from the Caribbean to Western Europe. But the idea is that when the weather's warmer, then the air is warmer and it can hold more moisture. So the air flowing over the ocean picks up more moisture and carries it onto the continent of Europe. That's why when there is cold weather and the air is colder and it doesn't pick up that moisture, there's a drought. So cold weather and drought go together. That's the idea of why there's a correlation. I wanted to bring that up today so we could cover that. But it is not the crucible that's being refined, all right? I mean, we're not trying to find out why our chronology is wrong. That's not what we're doing. We believe the chronology was right before we even started this article, because we had already tested our chronology. You recall how we tested the crucible earlier? Only if you've read all these articles, but if you've read these articles, you may recall that we were putting the blessed genealogy through every conceivable trial in our articles, and we'll cover them hopefully later. The articles Green, Joseph, Joseph and On, Phoenix, Moses, and the Ark of Urartu. The articles which preceded this article, The Crucible of Credible Creed. And do you recall how it met the test? The chronology met the test of surviving every conceivable trial. It did through those articles. You may not recall it because you haven't yet read it, and that's fine. But if you've read the articles, then you'll know what that is saying precisely. And I haven't read them recently either. I need to go back and read them all. And we need to study them. But should it fail, our chronology that is, after we put our faith in it, what would we be able to do other than give up or fashion a new vessel of chronology? A new chronology would have to be made if our chronology failed. And the fire is intense. You see, so only if we have a good chronology will it be able to withstand the fire, right, of the fire that purifies. And it acts on the contents, this fire, much more readily than on our crucible, which is stronger than fire. The crucible has to be stronger than fire. So our chronology has to be absolutely solid and able to withstand fire before we can actually write an article like The Crucible. The Crucible article was about how strong the chronology was through its being and having been refined through these previous articles. That's why the article Crucible came about. As in The Crucible, metals separate from the dross. So also in the genealogy do truths separate from fiction. The genealogy is the chronology that we call the crucible. And in this chronology we find that the truths are separated from fiction and the facts are purified. The facts of history are purified in the crucible. And that's what we're finding. That's why we've started to write this article, because we believe it really is able to purify history, and we're putting it to the test in this article to see, can the chronology really purify history? So that's all for that study for today. I'm really, really sleep deprived, and I was falling asleep in the previous failed video, which failed because of the audio problem. Fortunately, the quiet has prevailed now that the fridge is off. And Proverbs 28 and 5 is our scripture for today. It was highlighted earlier, but it had lost the highlight. Men given to badness, little children, cannot understand judgment. But those who are seeking Jehovah can understand everything. Well, I'm very privileged to do this, and I'll be going to bed immediately after this study. but I think we should try to get through it as quickly and painlessly as possible. For me, you know, constipation is not an option. It's painful, and it can lead to pain for many days later. So the fact that I forgot to take my magnesium is unfortunate, but actually it will lead me to be able to remember better in the future. No matter what my schedule is, I'll remember more about when to take the magnesium because of what happened this time. If I live long enough, that's the key. When things go wrong, you need to realize you could lose your life because that thing went wrong. Because one thing can lead to another. So even if just one thing goes wrong, you can lose your life because of the chain reaction or other events that succeed that event or follow that event. There can be a terrible, terrible sequence of events coming about because of the panic caused by the first event, for example, or the injury caused by the first event. But 1 Chronicles 20 now, and it came about at the time of the year's return, at the time that kings sally forth, and that's the time when kings sally forth, at the time of the year's return, which is springtime, when the year returns again to the beginning of the calendar, which was the springtime and near the vernal equinox, the beginning of spring. That was the beginning of the year, or the year's return, for both the Babylonians and also for the Jews, and we suppose many other people. That was the beginning of the year, not January like it is in, or was in the Julian and also the Gregorian calendar that we're using today. But the beginning of the year was in springtime, the return of the year. That was the time when the kings would sally forth in the springtime. And they would also sally forth at other times. But springtime was the typical time because the weather would be favorable and so on. Temperatures would be more favorable. That Joab, in the northern hemisphere, right? That's true in the northern hemisphere. That Joab proceeded to lead at the times that kings sally forth, at the time that the year's return had arrived. Joab proceeded to lead the combat force of the army and lay the hand of the sons of Ammon in ruin, and to come and besiege Rabbah, which was a city in the land of Ammon, land of the Ammonites. It was probably their capital city, I believe. While David was dwelling in Jerusalem, Rabbah is a very famous city of the sons of Ammon. So Joab besieged Rabbah, and Joab went on to strike Rabbah and throw it down. But David took the crown of Malcolm off its head. Malcolm was the god of the Ammonites, and found it to be a talent of gold in weight. And that is, I believe, 75 pounds a talent. And gold is a heavy metal, but a crown that weighs 75 pounds, you can imagine how hard that would be to put on your head. You have to have a strong neck. And in it, there were precious stones, in the crown that is, and it came to be on David's head. And the spoil of the city that he brought out was very much. And the people that were in it he brought out, and he kept them employed at sawing stones and at sharp instruments of iron and at axes. And that was the way David proceeded to do to all the cities of the sons of Ammon. Finally, David and all the people returned to Jerusalem. And it came about after this that war began breaking out at Gezer with the Philistines. It was then that Sibekai, the Hushathite, struck down Sippai of those born of the Rephaim, so that they were subdued. And there came to be war again with the Philistines, and Elhanan, the son of Jair, got to strike down Lami, the brother of Goliath the Gittite, the shaft of whose spear was like the beam of loom workers. Goliath was the one, or one of the same name. Evidently, he's the one whom David struck down in the battle between David and Goliath. And there came to be war again at Gath, when there happened to be a man of extraordinary size whose fingers and toes were in sixes, 24. Six fingers on each hand and six toes on each foot. 24 in all. And he too had been born to the Rephaim. And he kept taunting Israel. Finally, Jonathan, the son of Shimeah, the brother of David, struck him down. Shimeah was one of the brothers of David, you may recall. And now the final verse of this chapter. These were the ones that had been born to the Rephaim in Gath, and they came to fall by the hand of David and by the hand of his servants. So there were some large-sized humans, like Goliath, who were of the, they were said to be of the Rephaim. Right, it's a race. In the footnote here, it's a race of giants. They're very tall people, large people, tall, described as giants. But some of them had, or this one in particular, had six fingers and six toes on each of his hands and feet. Here I go. If I stop talking, I'm going to fall asleep. I have to move on. We've got to move forward till we get the good Lord Jesus help us, until we get the study done. So Hosea, it's not 8, it's Hosea 9 today. Do not rejoice, O Israel, do not act joyfully like the peoples, for by fornication you have gone from alongside your God. You have loved gifts of hire on all the thrashing floors of grain. That's appropriate, isn't it? Because we were talking about how Abraham had offered Isaac, or almost offered Isaac up as a sacrifice, and he did it in the land of Moriah, but it was on Mount Moriah that David purchased the thrashing floor of Ornan the Jebusite many years later, and that was on Mount Moriah, that thrashing floor of Ornan that David purchased for the purpose of building a temple. And it was on that ground that also the altar existed, where the sacrifices of the animals at the temple were made. It's very appropriate that we read about the sacrifice of Isaac that Abraham almost fulfilled at the same time as we're reading chapter 9 of Hosea mentioning the thrashing floors of grain. It seems to be remarkable correlation. Thrashing floor and wine press do not feed them, talking about Israel, and sweet wine itself proves disappointing to her. They will not continue dwelling in the land of Jehovah or Yahweh, and Ephraim must return to Egypt, and in Assyria they will eat what is unclean. They will not continue pouring out wine to Jehovah, who's also known as the true God, or Yahweh. And their sacrifices will not be gratifying to Yahweh. They are like the bread of times of mourning to them. All those eating it will defile themselves, for their bread is for their own soul. It will not come into the house of Jehovah. What will you people do in the day of meeting and in the day of the festival of Jehovah? For look, they will have to go because of despoiling. Egypt will collect them together. Memphis, which was a city in Egypt, for its part will bury them. As for their desirable things of silver, nettles themselves will take possession of them. Thorny bushes will be in their tents. The days of being given attention must come. The days of the due payment must come. Those of Israel will know it. The prophet will be foolish. The man of inspired expression will be maddened on account of the abundance of your error. Even animosity being abundant, The watchman of Ephraim was with my God. As regards a prophet, there is the trap of a birdcatcher on all his ways. There is an animosity in the house of his God. They have gone down deep in bringing ruin, as in the days of Gibeah. Wasn't Saul of Gibeah, the king Saul? He will remember their error. Jehovah will remember their error. Yahweh will remember their error. He will give attention to their sins. Like grapes in the wilderness I found Israel. Like the early fig on a fig tree in its beginning I saw the forefathers of you people. They themselves went into Baal of Peor. Baal of Peor was a false god, Baal, and it was that god that they were worshipping when they were committing gross sexual misconduct, for which one of the priests killed the offending couple, and they proceeded to dedicate themselves. The Israelites did. They dedicated themselves to the shameful thing, and they came to be disgusting, like the thing of their love. As regards Ephraim, like a flying creature, their glory flies away, so that there is no giving birth, and no pregnant belly, and no conception. For although they bring up their sons, I will also bereave them of children, so that there will be no man, because woe to them when I turn away from them. Ephraim, whom I have seen like Tyre planted in a pasture ground, even Ephraim is destined to a bringing out of his sons, even to a killer. Ephraim symbolizes Israel. Give to them, O Jehovah, what you should give. Give them a miscarrying womb and breasts shriveling up. All their badness was in Gilgal, for there I had to hate them. On account of the evil of their dealings, I shall drive them away from my own house. I will not continue on loving them. All their princes are acting stubborn. Ephraim must be struck down. Their very root must dry up. There will be no fruit that they produce. Also, in case they bring it birth, they bring to birth, meaning they bring children to birth, I will even put to death the desirable things of their belly, meaning the children that they desire. My God will reject them, for they have not listened to him, and they will become fugitives among the nations. And I'm nearly falling asleep, really, literally, as I speak. I am falling asleep. I can hardly keep my eyes open. We finished the ninth chapter of Hosea now. That's it. We're done our reading for the day. But look at there where it says they will become fugitives among the nations. That was fulfilled for both nations of Israel and Judah. They both became fugitives among the nations. Israel became fugitives when Assyria took them away and put Israel in different places, scattered them or brought them to different places to dwell.
Oh.
Excuse me, I'm so sorry, I'm so sleepy. And Judah became enslaved first to the Egyptians, and then they were taken captive by the Babylonians. For example, at the turn of the year, Nebuchadnezzar captured Jehoiakim, also called Jeconiah, who was the son of Jehoiakim, whose name ended with an M. The son's name ending in an N, Jehoiakim, and he was captured by Nebuchadnezzar. We believe from the Babylonian records themselves, it can be dated very accurately to the seventh year of Nebuchadnezzar, which is actually the year BCE 597. In January was when the siege began in that year. So, or sometime close to our January, or close to the January of the Julian calendar, which used to be the calendar prior to the time of Pope Gregory, who established the Gregorian calendar in 1580 CE. We have about 8 minutes. Last time I did this video, we had 9 minutes remaining, or 10. So we almost achieved the same thing, but I doubt that I was as good this time. I might have read better this time, but I wasn't as good at explaining it this time, because I'm getting more, my sleep deprivation is getting worse. I'm getting to the point where I'm literally going to fall asleep while I'm doing something. I'm going to fall asleep, or while I'm standing up, I will fall asleep. But I wanted to get this video done so I don't have to think about it anymore. Hopefully it worked this time with the audio. I tried the other microphone, and I had the same problem as I do with this microphone. So that tells me that it's not the microphone. It also tells me that it's something possibly wrong with the input of the computer. But it didn't seem... I mean, the proof that it wasn't that was I rebooted and the problem was gone. So it's a software problem that was causing very loud, harsh noise whenever I would speak. And it's not the problem we used to have. That was a different problem. That used to come static noise, but it got louder, and then a loud click, and then it would stop. That was a faulty cable that was replaced. This is a different problem that occurred. But I should have done a test recording. I realized after, instead of going through all the trouble of making the video and then finding it was no good. But it's only 33 minutes, so it could be worse. By the way, this will be, this year, March 31st will be the 33rd anniversary of the last time that I consumed any alcohol. So it's been that long. I'm very much aware of what that means. You know, I've been all the better for not consuming alcohol, I believe. There are many other good things to do besides poisoning your body with alcohol. It certainly doesn't benefit people to do so. And there's a scripture about that. It says, well, here it says, sweet wine itself proves disappointing to her, meaning to Israel. Right? Just means that, well, we know from earlier in the book of Hosea that it's wine that takes away good motive, it said. Hosea 4 and 11, it said, fornication and wine and sweet wine are what take away good motive. So wine would certainly be disappointing for that reason, but in this case, Israel was not even able to find any joy in things that they used to enjoy. They used to enjoy the wine, and they weren't able to find joy in that anymore. The reason not to use wine is manyfold. It could be so many things why you wouldn't want to drink any alcohol. In my case, I just don't like the state of how I feel. I don't like changing my mind or having my mind altered by a substance that doesn't render me productive and I don't get more enjoyment out of it. It doesn't lead to enjoyment after the fact. It doesn't lead to enjoyment. It leads to a waste of time that happened afterwards. So it's never a purely positive experience to drink wine, and I never... wanted to feel that feeling of, you know, being regret ever again of having altered my state of mind using a substance. So I don't do that. But there, you know, I don't do that. Particularly because it takes away good motive. It also takes away our inhibitions and makes us do things that we normally wouldn't do. We're not in the same, we're in an altered state. It's the same with drugs. If we take drugs, and anyone who takes drugs recreationally, and I don't do that since 1980, Haven't done that since 1980. That's 44, it's coming up to 44 years ago, since I will have taken any recreational drug like marijuana or anything like that, which is a very dangerous, I believe, habit, because of the habit that it is, which is to take away, once again, you know, it takes away the natural feelings, which are so important, and, you know, it creates a dependence on it too, just like with wine. People depend on wine, but it's okay to use wine for some people who are suffering. Just they need something, right? There's a scripture that says, Proverbs 31:8, give intoxicating liquor, O you people, to the one about to perish, and wine to those who are bitter of soul. So wine is really fine as long as it's to help people feel less bitter about their lives. And intoxicating liquor is fine as long as it's to help people to get through the time of their own disaster, or when they're about to perish, for example. If they know they're about to be destroyed, whether their ship is sinking or whatever it is, that's the purpose for intoxicating liquor, when there's no other hope. The fact is there always is some other hope if you believe that. So you don't need to ever take intoxicating liquor. But that's what the use of it is, as stated there, for those about to perish, and wine is for those who are bitter of soul. That's an interesting and rather uncommon explanation of the use of alcohol. But that implies symbolically also to drugs, you could say. But drugs are much more serious, because they have much deeper potential. Some of them do, for addiction and for other things. Nicotine, for example, is more addictive, they said, than heroin is. And there are many addictive substances that are not alcohol, but people definitely become addicted to alcohol. I think that was true. I think I realized that I was an addictive type of person who needed to just stay away from all of it. So I'm addicted to anything, no matter what I do. I'm addicted to what I'm doing. I start to become a workaholic, or I'm a different person. I find different addictions. Our study is over, but natural is better. And I hope you enjoyed the study. I enjoyed being with you. It's March 1st, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 21:22 hours Eastern Standard Time. Soon to be daylight savings time, a week from Sunday, on March 10th. And I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And in my behalf, this is Live Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.